Ain't gonna burn ourselves out no more. Ain't gonna burn ourselves out no more. Got each other on our side, plus all the folks at Fried, the Burnout Podcast with Kate Donovan.
You deserve more than feeling constantly fried to a crisp. Welcome to Fried, the Burnout Podcast, where you get the understanding, the community, and the information you need to end burnout for good. I'm your host, Kate Donovan, and all of my work focuses on hashtag ending burnout culture. Outside the pod, you'll find me on stages at conferences giving keynotes, in offices providing corporate trainings, doing virtual VIP one-on-one work, or supporting our group program, Unfried, that is run by my right-hand woman, Sarah Vosen. Both Sarah and I have been through burnout and came out stronger, happier, and more fulfilled, and we want that post-burnout growth for you, too.
Hello, everybody. Today, we're going to go a little off course, if you'll let me. I'm going to be talking to Will Robbins of the PGA, who is the founder and CEO of Robbins Golf Logistics, RGX, and owner of WR Golf in Folsom, California. After surviving the 2004 Thailand tsunami, Will shifted from pursuing a PGA Tour career to building a results-driven coaching business that has transformed the way golf is taught. My parents are obsessed, by the way, Will. RGX now operates in 18 countries and 43 states, helping hundreds of coaches increase revenue, productivity, and player results. Recognized for his global impact, Will has spoken at major golf summits, trained top professionals, and developed the scoring method, which we'll talk about today because we can use it in burnout as well as on the golf course, a proven system that has helped thousands of golfers lower their scores and enjoy the game. Will, it's not every day we have a golfer on the podcast.
I was going to say, you said we were going off course today, and I would say, yeah, we're going to go off course and get on the golf course, right?
Hopefully, eventually. So the interesting thing that I just want to point out from the very beginning, and this comes up a lot on Fred, and I think that we're still missing the message somehow, that you can be chasing the absolute correct quote-unquote dream, the one that you've always wanted, the one that's, and have it somehow not be right. You were chasing a dream as a professional golfer. Tsunami, COVID, those things far apart, but still each had their own effect and twist on your life. So when do you think your burnout story was more prevalent? Do you think it was the COVID time? Do you think it was the tsunami time? Can we talk about the tsunami anyway?
Absolutely. We can definitely talk about the tsunami. Yeah, we can talk about that. I mean, I think some of the perspective that I would probably put to it, you'd think that if someone had gone through, a lot of times I think people think like, you know, if I had something major happen to me, I'd have a better perspective on life. And I would agree to an extent, but it's very easy to forget that. Yeah. And so I think, you know, for me, I was blessed and my wife was blessed to live that day. I mean, we spent, you know, 31 days in hospital. So we were severe injuries and it was, you know, it was the last day of our honeymoon and it was a major event. 238,000 people died that day and we didn't. So that gives you a certain internal drive to go out and make some massive impact and also some perspective that most people don't have in their life, which is, you know, what does it feel like to live on a day where so many perished? But at the same time, burnout doesn't care. Burnout is just, you know, it's going to get you if you just start to do things that could seem a passion project, very driven by inspiration and impacting people's lives. And I love what I do. And I think that is also probably one of the hidden problems is that when you love what you do, it's so easy to keep saying yes. It's so easy to keep going and also to take the weight of others on your own shoulders and try and, you know, maneuver the boulder up the hill yourself rather than letting it just roll down the hill and smash what it needs to smash sometimes. So I think, yeah, for my journey, it was definitely the COVID times, which were the craziest.
Yeah. So what happened then? I mean, I think we are still dealing with the after effects in ways that we are not talking about.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
100%. But even before we get into that, where were you in your business? And then what happened when COVID hit?
Yeah. So, you know, the golf industry, I The golf industry had been struggling for quite some years. There was Tiger Woods, a huge boom, and then it faded back, and it was a bit of a struggle. And so, you know, almost 20 years ago, actually, this month, I started coaching. And when I decided to start coaching after the tsunami, I decided I wasn't going to do it like other people. And so I had built a system that went from selling people an hour lesson. Hey, I'm going to sell you an hour lesson for $100 or $200 or whatever the price is, to, you know, you can't chip and you shoot 100. And if you could chip, you could shoot 90. Well, I'll guarantee you that I'll get you to chip so you can shoot 90. So we went from selling time to selling results. And so the results were crazy because everyone was so used to sort of like, I don't take a lesson, it's going to mess my grip up and I'm not going to get better, to you're going to teach me for free if I don't get there. Yes, absolutely. If I don't get you to your goal, I'm going to get you there. Well, what happened was that we became the leader. We became the leader. So it's like, oh, I want to work on my driver. No. You showed up for chipping. Like, you're going to do this. So our business was booming. And so we had our locations in Folsom start to grow and other locations that we opened up here in Northern California. And then with RGX, I started to train golf pros all over the world. And so this was booming, you know, and it was great. Everyone's super happy and we're getting tons of great results. And then COVID hits and, you know, the world shuts down for everybody. But golf was really unique because the world shut down there for a few weeks. But then they realized you are distancing from somebody when you play the game of golf because one of you's in the trees and one of you's in a bunker. And so you can go ahead and get outside, good for mental health, exercise, and social distancing isn't a problem, you know. And so it was this emotional roller coaster of the first 4 to 6 weeks, I've got hundreds of coaches all around the world that are like, Will, I'm going to go broke. Like, I can't pay my mortgage. And you know, like everybody was. But it was like, I cannot teach. I can't make money. And so it was me helping them to, how do you do it online? How do you get into Zoom and do it through Zoom? How do you go ahead and, you know, just calm down the parents of the kids that you're teaching? And then how do you introduce them back to golf? And then how do you use masks? And how do you use all the hand wipes? And how do you make sure that you're following what the CDC is saying? And then it was, you know, okay, now there's the PPP money because we were closed. And how do we get through the PPP? So I went from being outside coaching and being on coaching calls where I'm inspiring coaches to get better at teaching the game and run their business, to I'm helping them put out the fires of their life and making sure that they can get the money they need to pay the mortgage and run through all of the CDC stuff and the ERC and the PPP, all that stuff that many of you all know about. And so it just became Zoom meeting after Zoom meeting after Zoom meeting. And for all of you that own your own company, you know, you're not going to let it fail, right? So what do? You just keep going. And I'm sitting at my computer for 8, 10, 12 hours a day with, I've got coaches in Australia and New Zealand and South Africa and Europe and America and East Coast, West Coast and Hawaii, and just becoming the sort of the I'm very positive in my perspective in life because of what I've been through, and I'm an inspirer and I always see the best in things. And so I'm just trying to help, at least from my side, as much as I possibly can, not realizing that while I'm doing that over 1 year, then 18 months, then 2 years, then 2.5 years, yeah, you know, and then golf really starts to boom. And I travel a lot for the PGA of America and train pros all over the country on how to do what we do, that you don't even know you burned out. You know, you just don't know. It's just like, I just don't seem to have as much energy as I had before, but keep going, you know, and you don't, you know, you seem to start to be a little bit more short and frustrated. And you start to seem like a little bit more negative about things, but you're like, well, it can't be that I'm working so many hours. You're like, and I'm 46 now, so maybe when I was 36 and 26, I could do it. But it was just this level of burnout where it's just like, you know, and then a lot of times, I'm sure people would experience is like, you know, if you've got someone who you're digging out of a hole and you're helping them a whole ton and they're so grateful, but 3 months later, they're like, well, I'm not getting what I need, I'm leaving. And you're like, it's like, dude, do you know how much energy I put in to pull you out of that hole? And it's like, now, it's not their fault at all. That's my fault, right? It's not my, it's just a business transaction. But I pour so much of my heart into it and so much of my, like, I've got to figure this out. I got to help them. And kids don't come in the room. I'm on Zoom meetings and I got to help this and I got to inspire these people. So when they leave, it's like a personal, not for them, it's not, but for me, it's like personally, like, wow, like I thought we were a team and like we've just got you back to zero. Now let's get you 10Xing again versus, well, I need to save $200 a month or whatever the number is, you know? And so then you just get cut. So then you get the, the emotional kick in the head, or wherever you want to call it, or the punch in the gut, right? Where you just feel like, oh my God, it's like, what am I doing here? You know? And then, you know, on the outside, a lot of people are saying, well, look how successful you are, because you've got all these coaches and you've got all this stuff and everything's going so great. And this, and on the inside, you know, you're like, okay, well, yeah, but payroll. Remember during that time when just payroll, everyone was like, I want more money. I want more money. It's like, yo, I can't charge more money for lessons. And so, you know, you've got payroll going through the roof on one side, right? You've got expenses going through the roof. You've got people who aren't willing to come back to golf. You've got all the stresses. And, you know, I don't know, just for me, I didn't intake it as like, this is burnout. It was just more like, just keep going, keep going, keep going. And I think, you know, that was really the sort of the start of that journey.
Yeah. And so I think there's a couple interesting things that I'm going to point out, and I've talked to you before, so I feel like these are places we can go. First of all, you're a white man in sports, in one of the most expensive sports on the planet.
Yeah, most affluent, yes.
Most affluent. So when we're thinking about this and we're thinking like, this is not something that's talked about a lot in your circles. From the people that apply to be on Fried as guests, 96% of them are women.
Yes, I've been through your podcast and I was like, wow, I'm going to be one of the guys.
Yeah, and there's a few, but I have had to search them out on purpose.
Yeah.
Because they're not coming forward to have these conversations. And you're talking about it pretty normally, and you're talking about working from your heart and wanting to give to people and things that women are not always used to hearing from the male side. We're not used to hearing you say that you're struggling with the same things that we're struggling with, and overgiving and overperforming and making sure everybody's happy and being hurt when people leave.
Yeah.
Do you think that because the last time we talked, you said you think a lot of PGA coaches are probably burnt out.
Yeah.
Do you think that they know it? And if they do, will they admit it?
That's a great question. It's a great point you make. And I think, I'm not sure if any of us know that we're burnt out until we're so far burnt out that then once we realize we're burnt out, and it's only when you start to take time off that you realize, oh, whoa, I was way gone. Like you thought, I'm a little burnt out. And then you take 2 weeks off and you go like, oh boy, like this is not good. Like I'm nowhere close to it. Or you get back to work and go, I've had 2 weeks off and I feel great. And you get back after it and 3 days later, like, oh, I'm tired again. And it's like, you know, your batteries went from 9% to 12 or 16%. And you're like, oh, I'm recharged. And it's like, no, you're not. You're nowhere close to recharge. So I would say that most PGA professionals, I think for PGA professionals, the struggle, both men and women, what is that we are so blessed to do what we love for a living. We just love teaching, we teach the game, we run the game of golf, we allow people to come out and have their passion and be out on the golf course. We can make them really, really good at it. It's fun entertainment, and we get to do that. And so I think for what I say to the average PGA professional, all PGA pros I talk to actually, is our servant heart is our Achilles heel. Mm. So yes, it's great that we give and give and give and, oh yeah, we'll get there early and, oh, I'll do a lesson in between lunch and, oh, your son needs a lesson because he's got a tournament this weekend, or, oh, you need an extra thing. And at the same time, I just teach many PGA professionals. They're also running a pro shop. They're running an entire staff, yeah. You know, and so you just keep giving and giving and giving. And it's almost like, for I would say the last 60 years, it's a badge of honor. Oh, I work weekends. I work 65 hours a week. That's what you've got to do to earn it. And that's what you've got to do. And where the PGA are really starting to make this shift is realizing that the next generation that's coming up is saying, well, it doesn't have to be that way. And it doesn't have to be that way. But there's that badge of honor. Well, this is what I did. And, you know, the PGA is realizing that we're not going to be able to bring in the next generation of PGA professionals if we say work Saturdays, Sundays, work 65 hours a week, work your way up your ladder and just be quiet and enjoy it. And it's like, no, that's not it. And so I think what's really great right now is I see a lot of our association who are sort of coming to that retirement age and now going from running a full business of employees and F&B and the golf course agronomy and all this to I'm going to retire and go and coach the game of golf and fall back in love with what I did, which was teaching and playing the game of golf. And so I think that it's, you know, to sort of answer your question, do they know it? No, because it's so much the ingrained way of doing it. But the younger generation, which is fantastic, is saying, like, I'm not going to do this. Like, it's not that important. Like, I have other priorities that I want to balance out. And I think that fresh perspective is now coming in and sort of clashing head to head. It's not that I'm lazy. It's just that I don't want to sacrifice everything I've got, family, health, spirituality, every part of my golf game, everything, to work for others. And so I think it's that learning, what I talk about is becoming a servant leader. Like, being a servant is the highest thing you can possibly be in life, right? If you can serve others, it's the highest. But you've got to lead people at the same time, so you're not sacrificing yourself. There's a difference between sacrificing to a point where you're giving to others that you're losing yourself in the midst. And I think that's where I personally struggle with, is I don't know the line between the two. And I'm not trying to sound humble and all spiritual and all great. I'm just saying is...
I just don't know where the line is.
I just don't know where the line is. Like, I have a lesson today. It starts at 6:30 in the morning. I'm there at 6:15. All the carts are lined up. Let's go and play golf. And we're out there having a ton of fun. And it's kind of meant to end at 9:00. And it's 9:40. And one of the guys is like, dude, I got a hard stop at 10:00. I got to get to work. I'm like, oh, yeah. Like, yeah, let's do it. Like, I'm just having so much of a great time. And they're hitting it great. And we're having a blast. And I'm like, oh, yeah, I got a podcast. I got to get on. Okay, I got to get out of here. So it's kind of that thing of like, it's great there, but if I did that tomorrow and the next day and the next day and the next day and the next day, but what I've learned how to do now is not do that where I was doing that 6 days a week, you know, and never knowing when to stop. And not because, oh, I want to drive more value to the players, because we're in the middle of getting somewhere. Somebody's achieving it. And yes, they're making it happen. Let's do this. And it's like, who cares about time, you know? And so that's, I think, one of the things. It's not... you know, like an employee where you're punching a clock and being like, it's 5:00, I'm done. I think for many who are either a parent or self-employed, it's like, there is no clock. It's like, you don't get to choose. Like, you don't get like, oh, I'm just not going to pick my kid up to swim school today. I'm tired. You're like, I'm going to go and coach him. I'm going to go and coach him soccer last night. Yeah, I was on a plane at 4:00 in the morning flying back from Texas, but get over it. Like, do you know what I mean? So there's this thing of like, oh, we got to get work-life balance. I don't think there's such a thing as work-life balance. There's just priorities. It's just like, what are you going to prioritize? And if it's the right order, you're going to probably have a lot of energy. If it's the wrong order, you're going to have no energy. And for me, that was prioritizing building a business and having success and bringing security to my family, which is a great theory. And it's what the world tells us, but it's not actually the important stuff in life. You know what I mean? And it's not the right order. So you get the order wrong, life seems very difficult. And if you get the order right, which is, I think, you know, your faith, your spirituality, your health, your family, and bringing that passion to work, things tend to go get better. I've just got to remember that every morning when I wake up, because if I don't, I go down the wrong path instantaneously.
So listen, listeners, my lovely listeners, I want you to sit for a moment after hearing that, because what I want you to hear, you could even rewind and maybe listen again. Or if there's someone that you're thinking of right now as you're listening to the podcast, go ahead and share this with them before you forget. But what I want you to sit and think about is the idea that when it comes to burnout, we are more alike than we are different. When it comes to burnout, we are more alike than we are different. I work with people from Morgan Stanley to nonprofit organizations all over the world. I work with people that make multi-millions a year, and I work with people that are making $35,000 a year. We do both around here. I'll talk to whoever wants to pay my fee as an organization, right? So we're working with both sides of these people. When I tell you they are struggling with the same problems, I mean it. Are there differences? Yes, because the guy over here can afford to pay me privately on top of the work I'm doing with their company, right? That does make a difference. But this is why we have the podcast. This is why we have other free resources to make things as accessible as possible to you. But I don't want you to get it in your head that your station in life is the reason. It might contribute to your burnout, but the reason for your burnout. Because when it comes down to it, in the 160 guest conversations that we've had, maybe 200 at this point, everybody is struggling with the same stuff. And the recovery is also usually pretty similar. So, Will, when you wrote your story, you said, the way back started with stripping life to the essentials. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, I mean, I was blessed in a way that it wasn't forced completely upon me, because I have had people that have come to me that physically, like, I can't get up, I can't move, I'm fit. And so some people that might be there, it's like their body is telling you it's like game, finish, start, restart. And so for me, yeah, it was just starting to realize, like, I just got to take time out. And as you said, like, I knew this was a pattern of mine. So just to go back a little bit to help with the way out is when I first started the academy, right? So 238,000 people died. You didn't. You've got to live for these people, and you've got to get out there and do something that's going to change the world. So revolutionize golf instruction worldwide. That's what I wrote down on a piece of paper. And it was, I'm going to get people results. And so I'm going at it with that full force. Yeah. And so within 2 or 3 years of just coaching, I was burnt out, exhausted, you know, because I was pouring into every single student, and I wanted it more than they wanted it. And I got them to their results, but I didn't realize how much I was doing it. So my wife being able to tell me is like, well, this is just like, this is a cycle that you go through. Like, this isn't like, this is, and I know that I got to be careful going forward. It's whatever it is. I can have great successes and I just keep going. And I go, oh, bananas, and I love it. And then I'm like, I think I'm burnt out. And my wife is like, okay, I've been telling you that for 9 months now. But anyway, now you're listening. So for me, is I knew it was a bit of a cycle. So I've sort of been through it a little bit before. But then it was just starting to look at my week and just being like, I've just got to start to say no. I've just got to start to say to people, yes, but I can do it for you this way. Let's get on a group call. Let's go ahead and have you watch the videos. Let's go ahead and have do this. And I had different people that gave me all these different ideas. One in particular, a good friend of mine, Brent, and he gave me some really good things. And when you're in the midst of it, you're like, I can't do that. I can't do that. I can't do that. And you're like, you just can't do that because your brain is stuck where it's stuck. And so it was things like, absolutely, let's hop on a one-on-one call for sure. Let's just say today's August the 20th. Yes, absolutely. I've got Monday the 6th of September at 9. Does that work for you? And it's amazing how people be like, well, you know, I probably got it. You're like, oh, okay. Like when you become so accessible, they come to you with all the problems. Now I know this from my other, let's put it in another perspective. When I first started the company up, my business partner, Jared at WR Golf, he comes on board and he's very disciplined and organized, instruction, engineer mind, and phenomenal businessman. And he's like, Will, you say yes to everybody and you give everybody free sessions and you don't cancel. If you cancel, you never charge them and all this stuff. And, you know, I saw him start to do this. Well, we're not going to have that absence policy anymore. We're going to put it, and, no, you can't do that. You can't do that. And then they put it into place and everyone's like, yeah, it's common sense, Will, because they're our kids. If we can't make it, I understand it. And now as a parent, I'm like, oh yeah, it's total common sense, isn't it? You know, but for me, it was like this, like, I can't do that. I can't do that. And saying to people, but you know, I can't talk to you till September the 7th, but you know what I can do is I've got an open call every week on Wednesday at 9 and it's open, and just hop on the call and send the email in and I'll talk to you on the call. And you know what happens? Nobody sends the email to you and nobody gets on the call. So really what they were doing was, and I'm not putting it down, is like they had a fire and they knew that I'm someone that puts out fires. And so they, hey, fireman, put out this fire versus like, hey, I can't do it. And they were like, oh, it's not that big a deal. It's not, and they weren't, I'm not putting them down in any way. It's always on me, right? It's the ability that if I just said, hey, absolutely, go ahead and schedule, but I'm so used to just responding and taking calls at 9 and 10 at night and responding to emails and texts and all this stuff, that they were just like, they weren't being rude. They were just like, it's Will. I'll do that.
Yeah, he's always available. He's so quick. He always responds. Exactly. He's always helping me. He always helps everybody. He never says no.
Exactly. And what I started to realize is like, I'm actually like doing an injustice to these people, because in golf, my whole focus on golf is every session you should be less dependent on me. Yeah. Not more dependent on me. And a lot of golf pros, it's like, oh, I need, what should I do, pro? I was on the 14th hole and I needed you there. And I'm like, well, obviously your pro is not helping you enough, because you need them. You need to do that on your own. So I found myself in my coaching, I was very good at getting people to be on their own, doing their own stuff. Go away for a few weeks, I don't need to see you right now. Whereas in business, I was very much like everything was like had to be done immediately and had to get done. So it was learning these little pieces of like, having to slow down, having to stop. And again, like what I used to do is in the summer, I'd go home for a month and spend a month in England and I'd have no phone on me. Well, during COVID, it was like, I can't do that. So even when I was going on vacations, it was just nonstop. So it was a matter of like literally putting my phone and my email away and then just getting open and honest with people and just being like, listen, I got to be honest with you. Like, I'm burnt out. I'm exhausted. I got a lot on my plate right now. I got to pick it up in September. And never did anyone ever say, well, that's not acceptable. Oh, totally get it, man. No worries. Like, you know, you feel the love from all the people that you help when you show them that you're weak, right? Because they just think, well, you're just so perfect. Like, you got this academy that runs perfectly. Well, ask my business partner if it runs perfectly. It doesn't run perfectly. Oh, and you just are so great at keynote speaking, and it just must be so easy. And it's like, no, I'm a disaster. I'm all over the place. You just see what you want to see. And so I think for me, it was, you know, just getting vulnerable with people and just being willing to say, look, I can't fit you in. I can't do this. And then, like you said, like the priorities is like, what is my priority? My priority is my faith and my family. And so where are they on the chart? And you just got to be honest. It's like, they're not on, like, for me, they weren't on the chart. Like, it was just like, well, if I get my business sorted, my rationale was, if I get my business sorted and make enough money, have enough insurance, have enough investments and have no debt and do all of this, and then my family will be, say, settled and everything will be good. And it's like, well, no, they won't, because all they want to do is hang out with you. They don't care about any of that stuff, you know? So it's like that. Okay, well, I got to rethink that. And then it's like, oh, well, you know, my health, that's not that big a deal, you know? So, okay, until you don't have it. And then obviously your faith and your spiritual journey of like, what am I relying on here? And what am I believing? And it's like, if I'm believing that more wealth, more money, more success is going to make you better, but everything is going downhill, health, relationships, friendships, energy is all dipping, well, then obviously it can't be true, right? Because, you know, we're all told, as at least young men, is like, you go out there and make money and succeed and everything's going to be great. Yeah, it'll be comfortable and it'll be good. I'm not putting it down. I'm happy, so blessed to have what I have. But the priorities are wrong. And if the priorities are wrong, then you get the outcome. You know what I mean? It's like you get the outcome of what you put in. So,
yeah, I think this point of giving people back their accountability is really important. And this is something that so many of us learn as a habit of like, if I fix things for everybody, if I become responsible for everybody's stuff, then I'm always needed, which means I'm valuable. And if I'm valuable, then I'll be loved. If I'm loved, then I'll be safe. And all of those things are happening subconsciously. I'm not saying people are thinking these things out loud, but it's so often that we find ourselves in a position, and I do this too, where we're solving people's problems for them long-term. And like you said, we're doing them a disservice. Because A, we're not allowing them to figure things out for themselves, right? And B, we are pouring into them at a time where if we continue to do that, when we pour into them with resentment.
Yeah.
Because we're like, I can't do that. I don't have the time. And then it piles up. And then the energy we're spreading is not good. And we've had this conversation a bunch because we have a burnout recovery program, right? It's called Unfried. It's 18 calls. So it lasts about 5 months because there's usually like a holiday along the way or a couple of weeks that we break it. So it gets broken up a little bit. So it's about 5 months that it takes. Burnout recovery takes longer than 5 months. But this is what we're saying. Like, I don't want you to need me for the whole 2 years. I want you to get to the place where you can do most of it by yourself. And then we have like a grad program that people join afterwards so they can get on a call once in a while and say, hey, this is what I'm facing in this moment, but it's not every single week for 2 years we're going to be going over this stuff. No, we're going to do it over 4 to 5 months. And then we're going to say, you've got this. If you fall, you can give us a call. But in the meantime, like, you learned these skills, now use them. And I think that there's for business owners especially, and actually those in the nonprofit sector, if we stop providing, then everything falls apart. And living through that, and like you said before, like, it's all your own stuff. Like, you are it's not, other people are not bad for asking you for stuff that you've always done. Right? Like, that's not what's happening here. And going through that internal work of understanding that it's better to teach a man to fish sort of thing is still a challenge for me, I would say. Like, that's still something that I have to remember to do. It's the National Speakers Association, the New York City chapter this year. That's one of my jobs as the leader. There's been a lot of like, help us fix this stuff, not to me, but to the leadership in general. And I'm trying to give things back to the speakers and saying, you've got this, here's how, you know. So for people who are really scared about that, are really scared about not solving the problems for people. This is really common in mothers, right? Like, a child opens a door to a refrigerator and says, there's nothing to eat. And a mother starts saying, there's leftover lasagna, there's soup in the thing, there's two, you know, push pops, there's a yogurt there. And instead of doing that, just being like, babe, I trust that you'll find what you need. We've got plenty of food, right? Like, how do we get through the guilt associated with not being the solution to everyone's problem?
Yeah, it's a great one. It's a great one. I'm going to start with what you were saying about the 5 months, and I think it's great. But then you said 2 years, and I completely agree. Is that, you know, it's the thing of like, yes, I can learn a new skill in 5 months, you know, but to really get results, whether it's in golf or burnout, it is 2 years. And people don't want to hear that. They're like, oh, just revamp it. And it's like, yeah, if you're 17, maybe, but you haven't done anything to get burned out. So you're not going to be that burned out, right? So I agree with that. So I think to answer your question is the first idea is to realize, like, am I trending in the wrong direction or the right direction? That's really the big thing, right? Which way am I heading? Because if I'm heading in a good direction, then it doesn't matter how long it takes you to get there. But if you're finding times for yourself, if you're finding times for your health, if you're finding yourself saying no and having times where you're like, I have nothing to do, so I've looked at my phone 12 times in the last 10 minutes. It's like, good, like, that's good. So I would first of all just be, can you trend towards something versus I have to get somewhere? Because my experience has been is that you start to get it good, you start to get it good, and you get a grip on life, you know what I mean? Because you let go of it, and then you start to get a grip back on life, and guess what? You're back in like, oh, I've overloaded my calendar. Oh, I've gone ahead and said yes to things. Oh my God, I got 7 weeks of travel in a row. What have I done? Do you know what I mean? And so just to start with, to understand, it's not something that you're ever going to get rid of. It's something that you're going to learn how to manage. You know, this world will give you trouble, as they say, right? I mean, it's like, the world is not going to change. It's always going to get faster, right? And people are always going to want more from you. And you're going to expect it for more. And you can go with it, or you can just go ahead and decide, oh, there's only so much I can do, and I'm just going to go ahead and do that. But to remember that on a daily basis when you're in the midst of the battle is really difficult. So I think that's where having accountability, having a coach is so vital, whether it's with burnout, whether it's with golf, whether it's anything that you want to improve at. It's like, I have no problem growing weeds in my yard. I'm phenomenal at it. Like, I mean, I can literally get weeds to grow 6 feet high so quickly. But you want to grow something that's beautiful, and it's like, I got to trim it back, and I got to water it, and I got to fertilize it. I got to make sure it doesn't get too much sun, and I got to make sure it doesn't get frozen and all this stuff. It's like, it's effort. And so that's where I would just be like, it's more this thing of, I'm just outside the parameters of my ability. Get back into them. Do you know what I'm saying? Not connect. Because what I think what we do is, at least for me, I won't talk for anybody else, but it's like, oh my God, you know, ChatGPT, I can do so much more now. And it's like, no, you already can't do what you're doing, Will. It's like, you already can't do that. What if that helped you just to do the stuff you did so you could not do more? And it's like, but I could do more. Our brain's going to go there, right? Because it's like, they were just programmed that way to just sort of like swim away from peace, you know? And so I think to me, it's like, figure out the game. Like, let me put it in golf terminology. So maybe some people will understand
maybe
it easier.
Maybe we go into the scoring method now, because this might actually work.
Yeah, exactly. Right. Okay. So let's take out burnout. Cause if you're in the middle of burnout, you're not going to understand this. Right. And if you're playing golf, and you're like, the pro's telling you this, you're not going to get it, right? So what I try and do is I help people like look at it the other way. So in golf, and for those of you that don't play golf, I'm happy for you, okay? You can stay away from this game. It's so crazy. It's such a great game, but it's very addictive and it's insane and makes no sense. So for those of you who don't play golf, this, you're going to think I'm insane, but I kind of am. So golfers go out with this expectation of like, hey, I can't wait to play golf on Saturday. It's going to be great. It's going to be an amazing time. I just can't wait to get out there. I love golf. Love the golf course. It's going to be great. Okay, now they head to the first tee and they go to the driving range. They hit it good. Hit it good. The driving range feels good. They get to the first tee and they smash one into a house. And they're like, I can't believe that happened. And they put another one down. They hit into some trees and then they smash it onto the green. And they spend the front nine just miserable, hitting the golf ball left and right and complaining. And it's like, wow, it's like, this is what you want to spend $100 a week on for 5 hours, 6 hours of your life. It's like, this is insane. But people keep doing it. So then I back up to them and they're like, well, you know, I'm so frustrated. I'm so frustrated. I'm like, okay, well, what's the best way for me to help you to get better at golf is first of all, to tell you, you're not that good to get angry at golf because you're terrible. Like, you're terrible at golf. Like if I was terrible at something and I didn't do it very, like if I'm terrible at cooking and I burnt the sausages, I shouldn't get upset. I'm like, I just suck at cooking. Like, that's just logic. Whereas people in golf think, well, I should be able to do that because I did it on the range or I did it 2 years ago. Yeah. Now, you haven't played in a month. You sat at a desk for 5 days in a row straight. You drove to the golf course, got there 4 minutes before you meant to tee off, ran to the first tee, made a swing with a driver that with a 1 degree open club face, the ball will go 30 yards right and 1 degree left will go 30 yards left, 60-yard dispersion, and there's trees on the right and houses on the left, and you think you're going to put it in the middle of the fairway, that would be called delusion. So for me is... My students are like, I'm paying for this for you to basically tell me that I suck. I'm like, no, I'm just trying to be honest with you. It's like, you're not that good. Yeah. So if we went ahead and say you're not that good, what we could do is lower your expectations and say that realistically, like most people would love to break 90. They'd love to break 90, but they don't get the game.
Yeah.
If you just went ahead and hit a 7-iron off the tee and a 7-iron down the fairway and chipped onto the green and 2-putted, you'd make a bogey.
Yeah. This is my grandfather's golf. That's how my grandfather golfed, 150 yards at a time.
Yeah. And if you did that for 18 holes and had one par, you shoot an 89 every time you play. Mm-hmm. But what do? We go out there, take driver, hit it one time good, lose 10 golf balls, get frustrated. We're not trying to play the game. We're trying to perfect it. And I think it's what we're trying to do with life is things shouldn't go wrong. Employees should show up and do what they're told. Customers should always be happy and the product should always be good. You're delusional. That's not what's meant to happen. Kids should listen to their parents. They should show up on time and do their homework and be well-behaved. That's delusion. That's not how it happens. So the more that you can say golf is just like, what you're going to do is just go out there for 5.5 hours and just have miniature disasters on every shot the whole time. And if you can accept that, you go, oh, okay, well, then you're saying I can miss it anywhere to the right. Yeah, just don't hit the house on the left. Oh, I miss it to the right. Okay, good. But you can find the golf ball again. And then you're going to go ahead and you're going to chip it out. No, don't try and make that putt. You might hit too hard. Just tap it down, tap it and get out of here with a five. Oh, well, this is just called golf. Like, you've got to learn how to play it before you try and improve at it. And so what I do with my students with the scoring method is this idea of like, we're told in golf, get on the green in regulation. I'm like, no, just keep the ball in play, get into a position to score and then try and get down from there. So everything I teach is lower expectations. And really with the nice way to say it is align your expectations with your talent or your skill or your ability. And if you do that, you don't feel so much pressure. So if I take someone's driver and put it back in the bag and say, what about your four hybrid? Oh, I love my four hybrid. Okay, well, you're probably going to be better off if you hit a four hybrid than if you hit the driver. So as they start to do that, what we start to realize, the second thing in golf is, well, there's two things is most people think they come to me with, I have a technique problem. My technique's wrong. And I'm like, no, you don't have a technique problem because I just saw you hit it good on the driving range and you hit it terrible on the golf course. You have a tension problem. Mm-hmm. You can't manage tension. Mm-hmm. And so most golfers, and again, I'll relate this back to life, is most golfers will say, golf is mental. Oh, golf is so mental. It's all between the ears. I'm like, you've got it wrong. If you've got it wrong, you're never going to fix it. Golf isn't mental. It's emotional. And people, oh, that's not much of a difference. Okay, when my wife is upset at me next time, probably in the next 4 to 5 hours, because I do something, and I say to her, honey, stop thinking so negatively, or babe, just calm down. How does that work? No, she's in an emotional state. The way to change an emotional state is to bring an emotion back down to level, right? So whether it's my daughter or my son or my wife, it's like to tell someone like, oh, just don't be nervous. Well, I am nervous. I'm on a tee box and there's four people behind me and I don't want to hit it in the water. Okay, well, if I went ahead and said to you, listen, take a 7-iron and just smash it down there. Who cares? You're like, oh, I could do a 7-iron. Your tension reduced. That wasn't positive thinking. That's negative thinking. I just told you to do something that's like not what you need to do. So really, I would say, how does this come back to burnout in life is, it's starting to realize that if you're playing the game the wrong way, you're always going to hate the game because you're trying to perfect it. People should show up on time. People shouldn't say that. People shouldn't do this.
People shouldn't notice when I'm tired. People shouldn't ask me to do stuff when I'm already overloaded. Yeah. My boss understands that, blah, blah, blah.
Exactly. And the world shouldn't be like this. And it's like, well, guess what it is? So the sooner you sort of accept it, and that's why golf is such a great game to play. For some of you who are thinking about it, go and play it because it's this little ball that you have to try and control. And once you play it enough and you learn the game the right way, you realize the only way I can actually can control it is by controlling myself. Like if I'm focused on the lake and focused on the other people and what most golfers like, oh my goodness, those people think I'm playing terrible today. Don't worry. They're so self-centered. They don't even know about your golf game. They're so worried about their own golf game. They're not focused on you. And so you start to realize it's like, if I just go through my process, and everyone always says to me, well, I want to be more consistent. I'm like, you're consistent. You're just consistent. It's like, you don't want to be good.
You don't want to be consistently bad.
Consistently hitting it right every time because you do the same thing every time. So a very famous golf coach, I was with him the other day, Michael Breed from the Golf Channel. He said, consistency. If you want to be consistent, you have to do something consistently. Embrace the mundane. In terms of, you just start going, right, I'm going to go ahead every morning and I'm going to have a glass of water to start off with. Cool. That's trending in the right direction, right? Yeah. I'm going to go ahead and do one push-up. Well, that's trending in the right direction. And I know people go, oh, yeah, this is so simple. It's like, but in golf, it's like, okay, before you grab driver, you're going to look at the hole and see where the trouble is, because you slice the ball and there's a school over there. You could actually hurt children on this shot. Like, you can't hit driver. Like, what are you going to do to go left on this hole? Because we're such in a mundane of, I'm on a par four, grab a driver. Oh, I'm a guy, I got to go to work, I got to make money, I got to succeed right away. I'm a mum, I got to be perfect. Nothing can go wrong. You know, I want everyone to think that my house is tidy all the time. It's complete nonsense. Of course it's not. Your house is a disaster. Let it be a disaster, right? I mean, so it's kind of like embracing that thing of like, this is the game. I'm going into a battlefield, but it's not really a battlefield. It's just called parenting, or it's called running a business, or it's called golf. And you go in there with the mindset of like, probably going to fail today. Probably going to run into a ton of difficulties. Probably going to struggle. Probably going to do some stuff that's completely stupid. I might have the occasional thing where it makes me think I'm decent at this, but I'm not. And you go that and you actually enjoy the game. And I know this for a fact because I got to caddy for 5 years at Cypress Point. It's one of the most famous clubs in America. It's always ranked between number one and two in the world. And I got to caddy there. And people got to, literally most people will never, ever, ever get to play Cypress. And if you do, you'll get to play it once in your life and you'll remember it forever. And my whole role was just to get people to enjoy their game there and not get stuck in, oh, I wanted to play well at Cypress and I hit my driver bad. So what I did to them, and for the head professional there, Casey Reamer, he probably already knows this, I just gently lied to them the entire day. Because what I would do is they'd be like, oh, well, I'm going to hit 7-iron from 150. I know they don't hit 7-iron 150. So I'd say, oh, it's uphill. It doesn't look uphill.
But it is.
And it's ocean air. And so it's heavier. So I want you to hit your 5-iron, the 170 club. And then they'd hit their 5-iron and get on the green and be like, wow, Will, that plays a long way. And I'm like, absolutely. Or I could say to them, well, you don't hit a 7-iron that far. You should hit a 5-iron. Now they're going to be frustrated with me. My whole goal was to help them to be like, listen, aim way over to the right. Well, I know the trouble's on the left and I know they hook it. So if they hit it over there. So my goal was to manage them around a golf course by emotionally getting them into a state where they were waiting for 7 months to play this golf course and they were so tense and so tight. I didn't know any yardages at the golf course. You were meant to know every yardage sprinkler. I didn't know any of them. Okay. But my goal was, can I get them into a state where they feel like they're enjoying their day and having a good time? And amazingly, they'd play some good golf. I'm not saying for 18 holes, but they made a birdie here or they hit the 16th on the green and they had such a great time. And that's where I really realized when I became a coach is, as a coach, my goal is to manage somebody's emotions. It's like teaching the technique. You can't do that on a golf course. That's another place. You have to go and do that on a driving range or on a putting green or a chipping green. But on a golf course, you're trying to manage people's emotions. So I would be saying, you know, to those of you who are listening, I'm no expert at this as you are. But it's like, you know, you've got those people who can help you out of those emotional states. And you hop on a phone call with them and you get honest with them and vent and you stress out and you just get it out. And then they give you the perspective of like, okay, now that you've said that, what's your part in it? What's your accountability? What can you do to change it? They don't co-sign your crap, right? They go, okay, I'm hearing you, but you can't control that person. And, you know, it sounds like you're getting a little bit overworked up and it sounds like, you know, and you process that stuff. And so that's sort of that journey. And whether that's for you, it could be through faith with church. It could be through your spiritual journey. It could be through grit, dear friends. But it's like, you know, my mind is a dangerous place to be. It's a very scary place. And so if I'm not getting open and honest with other people about where I'm at, I'm going to tell myself I'm okay. And that's when I'm in real trouble. And so I think that that's like that journey of recovery. You know, for me, it's like that road of recovery is, is just going through those steps, and working through that. And so that's why I love golf, because it's just this crazy, crazy game that's so much like life. And most people, including myself, have life the wrong way around. And we try and go and perfect it, and we expect it to go right. And that's what people do with golf. And it's fun for me to try and help them to think a different way so they could actually enjoy the game that they love and actually start to love it, because they're like, it's a game and it's fun if I play it. But if I try and perfect it, it's miserable.
And this is one of the, Sarah and I did an episode ages ago about why you're getting stuck in your burnout recovery. And the number one reason people get stuck in their burnout recovery is because they're trying to optimize it.
Yeah.
They're trying to make it the best. I'm going to be the best at burnout recovery that there ever was. And it's like, as soon as you say that, you've rolled backwards, because you're putting your, and the expectations in burnout, it's funny because there's a lot of like these outside shoulds that people should act certain ways and people shouldn't demand this of me. And there's a ton of inside shoulds. Like, people have this weird idea that no matter what happens in their lives, that it's not actually stress. And I think, all right, Fried Fam, listen up. This is important. Stress is not an emotion. It's a reaction. So the emotion that you're feeling when you're saying that you're stressed is not stress. It might be anger, overwhelm, frustration, irritation, sadness, it could be a lot of things, but stress is not an emotion. So when you say, but I didn't feel stressed in X, Y, and Z scenarios, I don't give a shit. Your body was in a stressed state because what you were going through was stressful. And so oftentimes that's the conversation I'm having. People are like, I should be okay, but my mother died last week. I had an assignment due. My plane was late for the funeral. And I'm like, yeah, that's a lot. And they're like, well, I should be okay. I mean, I've been breathing. And I'm like, no. So one of the most common sentences that Sarah and I both say is, oh, so you're human. Oh, so you're in this life and you're tense because you're human. That's how it goes. So I think this idea of like the first thing you said in this process is like, first, like align to the level of your talent, the nice way to say it. And in burnout recovery, the chances that you have any talent about A, recognizing stress appropriately, and then B, responding to it appropriately are minimal. And not because you're a bad person, not because you're not smart, not because you haven't read a self-help book, but because you've never actually practiced these things because we're not taught them.
Yeah.
And you want to be perfect at them as soon as you find out you're burnt out, and you can't do that.
Yeah.
Most people are bad at burnout recovery and they're trying to do it on their own. Right. And then the other step is release tension that you said, right? Like, first, align to the level of your talent. And the second is release tension. You've got to understand that this process is longer than you want it to be. You are going to fail at it regularly, and then you're going to have sparks of greatness along the way, just like you mentioned. And that's how it's going to go, because all of this requires practice and practice and practice until it becomes easier. And if you practice while you're tense, guess what? You're going to perform it being tense. And guess what? If you perform it being tense, it's not going to get you the result that you want. So I love, this is such a, for those of you who don't know, Fried, I do know how to golf. I have golfed most of my life. I am terrible at it. And as soon as, when Will was saying before, oh, but there's water. As soon as there's water, my ball is going in the water. I am very consistent hitting the ball in the water. So I understand this overlap between golf and life and burnout. And I think that the most important things here are remembering the priorities, remembering what you know and what you don't know, and remembering that anything that you do with tension doesn't get you the result that you're hoping for.
Yeah. And one thing I would say there for you is, I just had a husband and wife come into town for a golf school, and going over water, can't do it. So what we did was we got a bunch of golf balls out, and I said, okay, Vicky, let's go ahead, put the ball down. Now smash this golf ball in the water for me. And she smashed it into the water. I said, Vicky, go ahead and smash this ball into those trees over there for me. Smashes it into the trees. Every time we got to water, I made her hit it in the water. And I said, does the ball know? Does the water know? Does the club know? Does the course know that it's a bad golf shot? So the point for her, and on the last hole, it was crazy. She had an 8-iron from 125 yards. She's like, oh, I don't know if I can get it there. And she swung with freedom, and she flew the green, never even came close to the green, cleared the green, hit it 140 yards. And she's like, because she'd taken the handbrake off. So part of the way to do that with golfers and in life is go into the fear. Like, if you're afraid of slicing it out of bounds on the fourth hole, go out there and slice 32 of them in a row out of bounds for fun. Because what you do is you what I call scratching the record. Tony Robbins talks about it with NLP. You scratch that record so hard, you'll never play it again the same way. Because you'll stand up on that tee box and be like, oh my God, remember that time that I hit 32 in a row out of bounds intentionally? Well, now you can't have the same level of tension. So for Vicky, it was literally hitting the ball in the water over and over again. And but I'm not allowed to do this. I'm like, but that's why you're tense, because somebody told you you shouldn't hit it into the water. Nobody knows. Okay, your score might go up, but now it's not the water that's making it go bad. It's your tension that's going bad, which is what? Your expectation that you should go over it. And so it's this freedom of like, go out the next time you play and hit five balls in a row into the water and just enjoy it and watch how good you hit them. And you'll be like, what if I just didn't think about hitting the water and I aimed over to the right there? Well, that would be a good idea, right? So sometimes we try and avoid what we want rather than going straight into the head of it and being like, well, we might as well, I keep doing it, so I might as well just go ahead and enjoy doing it. And I know it seems hard, but if you have a coach, I would say it's hard to do without a coach, whether it's in burnout or golf. If you do it, you free up, and it's like that record can never play the same way again. And once it can't play again, it has to play, you have to find a new song. So it's going to be a different song.
Yeah. My dad always walks behind me on the golf course and goes, don't think about the water. What a jerk. Yeah. So Fried Fam. This is a little different today, and I want to go back and just take a moment. This reminders, A, when we get to burnout, we're all doing it the same. We're all dealing with the same problems and the same shit. B, if you try and optimize your golf game, life, or burnout, you will likely fail because there's no such thing. So it's an impossible task. B, if you don't learn to fail well and release the tension around it, you're going to trip up in burnout recovery. You're going to say yes when you meant to say no. You're going to be like, shoot, I should have set that boundary and I didn't. You're going to mess up. All of those mistakes are learnings as long as you can take them that way. Will, is there anything that you think you should have said that we missed?
No, it's been a fun, it's been fun. You know, I just think, like you're saying, I mean, prioritize, get the priorities right. I'm not sure if, you know, having a perfect business or making the right amount of money or being a perfect parent is the right thing. You know what I mean? Get the priorities right. And I think things start to realign because you start to do things differently. So just what you're saying, and you're not going to get it perfect, and enjoy it, you know, play the game, be willing to laugh at yourself a little bit. And have people around you that you can get to be completely honest with, you know what I'm saying? Whether that's a therapist, whether that's, you know what I mean? It's like you've got to have people that you can get honest with so you can start to actually get what's inside your head out, because it's not safe for it to be staying in your head.
Well, where should people go to if they're like, my husband actually needs this guy because he comes home from golf miserable every week, or I'm trying to play golf with my husband and this sucks?
Yeah. So, I mean, you know, if they want to find out more about the scoring method, thescoringmethod.com is the best place to go. If you want to find out more about what I do and my coaching and stuff, just willrobbins.com. So WILLROBINS, two L's, one B. So willrobbins.com, all of the stuff is there. And yeah, have fun with it. There's some good videos in there about how to quit golf and how to break golf clubs and how to throw clubs in lakes and stuff like that, because you've got to have fun with it, because this game is crazy and you got to enjoy it. So.
As per usual, Fried Fam, all of those things will be in the show notes, so you don't even have to remember them, and you don't have to remember how to spell them, because I will give them to you so you don't have to think. Will, thank you so much for coming and chatting with us today. I'm so grateful to you, and I can't wait to see what happens next.
Absolutely. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Fried Fam. Until next time.
Ain't gonna burn ourselves out no more. Ain't gonna burn ourselves out no more. Got each other on our side, plus all the folks at Fried, the Burnout Podcast. with Kate Donovan.